Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound. This is Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Thanks for tuning in to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. We talk a lot about green jobs here on For the People and how they're going to enhance participating members of Connecticut's workforce. So today we're going to bring in a representative from the program partner Eversource and one of the newest members of that workforce who recently completed Energize Connecticut's Green Step program to tell you all about it. Then we're going to be talking about the Wealth Accelerator, an economic justice initiative being led by a group of regional organizations serving Greater New Haven that joined forces to test and scale wealth building strategies in low-income communities and communities of color. So stick with us to learn how they made this innovative project happen and why it's so important. And we're going to close with the director of Bridgeport's Barnum Museum. We're going to discuss the museum's recent Emmy Award-winning project and a number of programs that'll help you look at the world's greatest showman and the museum that showcases his life in a whole new and exciting way. But first, we want to remind you that Homes for the Brave is inviting everyone to join a fun celebratory event that supports our brave servicemen and women. It's the 11th annual Step Up for the Brave Challenge. It's going to be taking place on Saturday, August 16th at the Martyr Family Arena at Sacred Heart University. This fitness event raises critical funds for Connecticut's veterans experience homelessness, hunger, and mental health challenges. Even those unable to attend the actual event in person can participate in a virtual walking challenge taking place between August 11th and 15th. Details about sponsorship opportunities and to register are all available for you at homesforthebrave.org. All right. So as we mentioned in our introduction this morning, regular listeners to the program over the years have heard us talking to folks representing Energize Connecticut and in recent years about all of the excitement and opportunities around their Green Step program. And we're back today to talk about it with Ricardo Jordan. He's a manager of energy efficiency for Eversource, but we're more excited that we can also bring in a former Green Step program participant. Douglas Jeffrey is on the line with us as well. So let's go to you, Ricky. Thanks for joining us and great to talk to you. Give us a little bit of the necessary background on this Green Step program for folks who may not remember from prior conversations with your colleagues.
Sure thing, and thanks, John, for having us. So the Green Sustainability Technical Education Program, or Green Step, as it's more commonly known, it's a program that's been around since 2015. And what it is, it's a program that's sponsored and offered by the Energize Connecticut sponsors, which includes Eversource, where I'm from, and our counterparts Avangrid and their subsidiaries United Illuminating, Southern Connecticut Gas, and Connecticut Natural Gas. It's a green workforce development program, and it was originally designed to prepare students for jobs in the green building industry by offering very specific and tailored industry trainings and certifications to help prep these students for work in the green building trades. And it also is designed to offset the costs of obtaining those trainings and certifications, which normally you would have to incur on your own. And this program, which initially was focused on just supplementing existing high school curriculum throughout the technical high schools in Connecticut, has advanced over the years, and now we offer very specialized training workshops that not only increase students' awareness of what's going on in sustainability and energy efficiency and the green building trade, but it's also getting students aware for life after school and, you know, for the work that's to come. And, you know, in my world, in energy, which we talk about more now than we ever have, you know, we have such a growing workforce, especially in Connecticut, with our clean energy economy. I think, you know, in recent years, we're supporting nearly 46,000 jobs in the clean energy sector alone in Connecticut. And to continue to expand upon those needs, what we need are programs like Green Step to help match the needs of that growing workforce, to provide the skills and the training that's necessary to continue to grow that workforce. And it's great that we can offer programs like Green Step. We can accommodate as many students as possible, after school, summer programs. You know, we work with traditional high schools as well as the students in technical high schools. And we try to make sure we get these programs available to as many students as we can.
So we're hitting the 10-year mark on this program. Have you been affiliated with it for some or most of those 10 years?
I have. You know, I've been privileged enough to have been with Eversource since 2015, since the inception, and more involved in the last 3 or 4 years more recently. But I've really seen the evolution of the program in terms of the different trainings that we're bringing in, the instructors that we're coordinating with in the Northeast region to come in and provide these unique trainings to the students. And we're seeing the student population grow year after year.
And are your feelings based on the kind of tracking that I know that Energize Connecticut does, that a good number or a substantial number, I guess I should say, of the folks who come out of this Green Step initiative either have stuck with it within jobs they gained or were placed in upon leaving the program, or are working in some other realm of the green energy industry?
Well, that is the hope. I mean, we try to track as much as we can. We love data. I love data. You know, to date, throughout the entirety of the program, we've actually issued more than 12,600 certifications. Yeah, that's just astounding. And when you look at the kind of certifications that we offer, such as the Building Performance Institute certifications, you know, healthy housing principles, building analyst training, building science principles, I mean, the trainings go on and on, certifications that we have. Just amazed that we can offer something like this at the high school level. And getting these young professionals ready for that workforce, and we're seeing the workforce grow year after year, so the numbers are matching the story.
That's great. Well, Energize Connecticut's been a regular resource here on For the People, and your representatives have talked about how Energize Connecticut is responsible for implementing residential and business energy saving and efficiency programs. How does Green Step fit into that mix of support services to help us all save more energy, more money, and make Connecticut a more environmentally friendly place to be?
So one of the great things about the Energize Connecticut portfolio is we have programs for businesses of all sizes, for homes, medium and small customers. But more importantly, you know, we're responsible for some offerings tailored to the small business market. We also have programs that are tailored for single-family residential homes. We call that our Home Energy Solutions Program. And we have other energy efficiency programs also. But the thing is, you know, to successfully implement these programs, you know, from the utility side, promoting the programs is one thing and having that inherent knowledge, but we need the workforce. More importantly, we need to make sure the workforce has the right skills, that they're knowledgeable, they know what they can do, so that our customers in Connecticut can trust that these programs are backed and supported by the right workforce that can get the job done. And just, you know, last year alone, I know I was throwing some numbers out there, but we supported over 46,000 jobs in clean energy just in Connecticut. And, you know, making sure that we have those skilled professionals to continue to grow that workforce is very important, because our programs here continue to be successful year after year. Our customers continue to see the benefits, and it's the workforce that we owe a debt of gratitude for making sure those programs are successful. I mean, with programs like these, we're able to support our young people, our young professionals, and make sure they're equipped with all the tools that they need to not just be successful now, but to be successful and have a career in clean energy, sustainability, and energy efficiency.
Mm. And I think it's important to state here a little bit off the guidelines that this is a program that really stays at or ahead of trends in the product lines and services and applications that Green Step certified individuals are utilizing every day. Now, I know you said in the 10 years that this program's around, you've been on the periphery for a number of them, but even in the past few years where you've been integrated into the program much more tightly, I'm sure you have seen how the program has morphed and changed and improved to address new trends, new technologies, new practices as they're happening.
Absolutely. In recent years, when we're thinking about, decarbonizing and lowering our carbon footprint, newer technologies such as heat pumps, especially for our residential customers, has been huge. And, we've got students, 16, 17, 18-year-olds taking apart heat pumps and putting them back together, understanding the thermodynamics that's involved, the refrigeration cycles, the heat transfer, everything involved in these mechanical equipments. And it's just amazing that they're able to comprehend and learn this at such a young age. And that's going to set them up for a future in the trades, if they want to consider, working for other organizations that support our programs right now. We recently had a career fair where we had some of those companies come down and speak to these graduates, about a future in the trades. And just amazing, how we're able to make sure we match those trends that you spoke of with the curriculum, because energy efficiency has, it's been a concept that's been around for a very long time. But over time, the technology keeps advancing, and we make sure that the curriculum and the different educational trainings that we have matches those trends. And it's just amazing to see what we've done in recent years.
Yeah. And you mentioned the four certifications from the Building Performance Institute that the students can earn. But kind of keeping in line with the last question and answer, there's constant introduction of new information to a number of workshops and kind of continuing education trainings. Can we just run down that list before we bring Douglas into the conversation?
No problem. Yeah, we've got, beyond the certifications as I spoke of before, one of the great things about Green Step is that we also offer specialized workshops and other trainings for specific technical trades. Some of those include an introduction to energy and sustainability, which is, more of a global concept. We have an introduction to solar, because we have our customers also thinking about a renewable path. But what we do is we make sure that our customers understand that energy efficiency is something you want to tackle first. And then you could look at a concept like solar. These are young professionals, and we also want to make sure that they're ready to enter the workforce and build careers. So we have workshops on resume building and interviewing skills. But back to the energy and green building trades, we have technical trades in duct blasting. We have trainings on how to use a blower door, weatherization, which is a very important measure with our homes and residents. Insulation and air sealing training, and also introductions to both heat pumps and geothermal technology, as well as energy efficient lighting and building codes, which centers around, when you're going to construct a new property, there are certain energy efficiency building codes that you want to have in place. Design, if you can design from the ground up, be as efficient as you can. And then with lighting, we all need lighting wherever we go, and energy efficiency and lighting are still very paramount in this field.
Saving homeowners, consumers, and municipalities and businesses you know, tens of millions of dollars just by switching to the most efficient lighting is just the scratching the surface in terms of the kind of economic benefits that these programs bring. But right now, I want to bring Douglas Joffrey into the conversation. Douglas, you with us?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for joining us. Tell us a little bit about your story and how you came to learn about and participate in the Summer Green Step program.
Yeah, so I was a part of the first group of students to go through the Summer Green Step program back in 2023. I heard about it through my high school carpentry teacher since I was in a technical high school. And since college costs were so expensive, I decided to give it a try, and I'm so glad I did. I participated in the Green Building and New Construction course to get my LEED GA, and I learned a lot during those weeks that wasn't covered at my trade. As a result, I received a scholarship to Tunksis Community College for Energy Management, where I'm currently enrolled.
I always like to put a plug in for our technical high school system. Which one did you go to?
I went to Wilcox Tech.
Excellent. Great. So now that you're looking back over these years since you got out of the program, what would you say are a couple of the biggest benefits that you are enjoying from being a graduate of Green Step?
The fact of getting paid while learning, I think the biggest benefit to the students is that it gives them the time to plan out their futures and really decide which step they want to take next. And it gives them the real world experience and readiness. During these summer sessions, students get to interact with industry professionals and see how these technologies and principles are applied in the real world situations. And this experience, combined with our collective coursework, really helps everyone.
So tell me about the work you're doing today.
So, in addition, right now I'm with Earth Forward Group, teaching with the Green Step program as an associate teacher. And I'm also doing that while going through Tunksis.
Okay. And you not only have been able to share your experience and inspire other people into this industry, but it looks like you've had a lot of opportunity to network and interact with other folks at things like conferences.
Yeah, yes, I was able to attend Green Building and Energy Management conferences to learn about the new building techniques and technologies. And additionally, in the fall, I'll start class at Sacred Heart University, where I hope to combine my interest in energy management and marine biology.
What's your hope to eventually end up doing with that combined with those combined fields of study?
I can't tell you yet. I am still looking into how to combine them, but it's going to be big.
Well, I knowing the little that I do about some certain marine biology pursuits, they're also interested in devoting the most resources to getting the best results, and that means kind of siphoning off budgetary revenue that might otherwise go to paying for energy costs. So I'm sure somebody with your background and passion is going to make a big difference no matter where you go. But as a Green Step instructor, do you know how many students have participated in the program? And since you've been involved, have you seen great interest in it?
So today we've had a total of 12,600 students participate in the Green Step programming and receive certifications. These numbers include student participants in the in-school, after-school, and summer program options. Also, our participating schools, including technical and traditional high schools, have increased from 24 to 39 schools. The interest is definitely there, and we look forward to helping these students achieve their career aspirations.
So this was your third summer energy training program. How did it go?
It went great. We held our career expo earlier this week and the award ceremony. But this semester, if you will, was awesome. Like the previous year, students had three different curriculum tracks they could select from. The first was weatherization and existing building upgrades. The second was decarbonization and efficient building systems. And the third was green building and new construction, which, as I mentioned earlier, is the one I participated in. In addition to those courses, all the students went through what we call a work-ready training. This coursework focused on OSHA 10 training, heat pumps and geothermal, and resume and interview training.
Very good. Ricky, in the last couple minutes that we have with you, I understand that these students get paid to be part of the training opportunity. Could you talk just a little bit about that? And because typically people pay to receive this type of expert training.
Yes, and we understand, you know, summertime is a time when most students are working. I recall myself being in high school and working over the summer. So we wanted to give, you know, students the opportunity to fully focus on their coursework. You know, students were able to earn $15 an hour for every hour of training, including any hour of testing that they participated in during the program year. And they also had an opportunity to earn a bonus for every one of the exams that they passed for the different certifications.
And for those who are listening to our conversation this morning and wanting to get involved, or if there's a educational representative from a school or a district that might want to think about introducing this curriculum into their system, can you just let folks know where to go to get more information or register?
Sure. Yeah. For anyone that's listening that wants to learn more about dates and times of upcoming sessions, or want to discuss more broadly the kind of curriculum that we're offering, I recommend listeners to visit energizect.com and search for Green Step, and you'll be able to find out more about what we have going on.
Fantastic. Really appreciate your time, guys, this morning. Ricardo Jordan is manager for the Energy Efficiency Initiative at Eversource. And our special guest, Douglas Joffrey, is a former Green Step participant, now an instructor, and working on figuring out how he's going to apply the education he's both gotten and imparted on so many others with a possible career in marine biology. Douglas, I wish you great luck in that, and I hope that we get to talk again so we could find out how you ended up combining those two fields into something that I'm sure is going to be both innovative and very successful. Thank you both for being on the show this morning. All right. So as you know, we have this really exciting conversation this morning with some folks that are representing a very important project called the Wealth Accelerator. A group of regional organizations serving Greater New Haven joined forces to test and scale wealth building strategies in low-income communities and communities of color. And the Wealth Accelerator, this economic justice initiative, was developed through a partnership between CONCAT, CONCORP, the Connecticut Project, the Community Foundation for Greater New Haven, and the William Casper Graustein Memorial Fund. And it launched with a community event just a couple weeks ago on June 25th. We're pleased to have representatives of two of those organizations with us. Eric Clemens is here. He's CEO of CONCORP and CONCAT. And Kate Reeves is with the Connecticut Project. She's the director of their economic well-being wing. We want to bring them onto the conversation here, but we do want to remind you first that you can join our friends at Read to Grow for their Dive into Reading Family Day on Monday, July 28th from 4 to 7 at their offices in Brantford for a fun-filled evening celebrating books, family, and community. This free event's open to all and is going to feature a live read aloud by award-winning author Cindy Rodriguez. plus games, snacks, entertainment, and book giveaways. Read to Grow is there for families, promoting language skills and literacy for children beginning at birth, and to support families as their baby's first teachers. Learn more about the cause, this event, and other literacy building activities at readtogrow.org. All right, from reading to wealth, both sort of the same thing. One brings the other, I'd say. Eric Clemens is with us, as we said, with Concorp and Concat, and Kate Reeves also. Thank you for joining. Eric, let's go to you first. Let's start when the Wealth Accelerator was just a glimmer of an idea for Greater New Haven.
Yeah, thank you. First, John, thank you for having me on, and Kate, good morning to you. You know, some years ago, maybe I would say about 4 years ago, maybe 3 years, 3.5 years ago, I was speaking at an event, and I was talking about the fact that institutions who are mostly white-led are always asking for or mining data around Black and brown communities that have languished in poverty. And I, you know, some folks had asked me for the data of the Newhallville community in New Haven, which you know is a historical and Black community, mm-hmm. as well as the Dixwell community in New Haven, which is the same persuasion. And, you know, I kind of got a little fed up, but respectfully fed up. And I said, you know, that Black and brown communities, and especially Black communities, because those are communities I work on their behalf, mm-hmm. are basically sick and tired of being measured and research heaped upon them.
Yeah.
Mining data on their
Stop poking me and give me the stop poking me and give me the vaccine, for crying out loud.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. and you know, data being mined on the their human conditions.
Yes.
And most often, if not always, John, those conditions never changing upon the final research. And what usually ends up happening, if not always, is those conditions don't change. They usually get worse, while at the same time, those who have measured them get published. And so, you know, I said a few more words, and I got a call that evening from some folks who had heard me speak. And they said, you know, they wanted to work with me to address the issue that I was articulating and wanted to find a way to address the racial wealth gap in New Haven. And I thought to myself, wow, they're not talking about data. They're not talking about just surveys. They are talking about rolling up their sleeve with me to address this longstanding issue of people who are living in poverty, not because of their own lack of effort, but because of entrenched systems that have not allowed them to reach their potential. And usually what undergirds that is race. Racism is the weapon of poverty. And so they asked if they could work with me on creating a vehicle or whatever. We had no idea what we were going to create, which is just ends up having to be the Wealth Accelerator. Mm. And so we started working on this idea of addressing wealth disparities in Black and brown neighborhoods in New Haven. And so that's kind of the origin story. And we, you know, of course, we looked at the data now, where we want to be, ways in which we can create something to scale. And here we have the Wealth Accelerator. And what I ended up doing was bringing an invitation to the folks that I respect and love who do great work in New Haven and throughout the state of Connecticut, Kate Reeves being on the call, and her CEO, Garth Harries, and Morelis Vasquez, as you said, John, Dr. Karen DuBois-Walton, and Seamus Strader Anthony, and other folks who have chosen to do this work with us for the past 2 years. They were enlisted. But, that's really how – that's the origin story, John.
Yeah,
it was me having a talk and folks hearing it and hopefully being inspired and encouraged to the point of action with me.
That's great. You pivoted on the point of actions, not words.
Exactly.
Excellent.
Exactly.
Well, as you mentioned, Kate is the one who's going to be able to talk about how these ripple effects are going to wash over the greater New Haven community and those who need this initiative the most, bringing them financial resources, education, learning opportunities, just basically helping people take control of their financial future, right, Kate?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think thank you so much for having us, John and Eric. Thanks for that. Thanks for that great introduction to the Wealth Accelerator. I mean, the Connecticut Project brings together people, resources, and ideas to build opportunity regardless of race, gender, income, and geography across the state. And we really saw a powerful opportunity for the Wealth Accelerator to be an incubator for wealth building interventions that ultimately will demonstrate that investing in people's long-term financial health works, and that programs and pilots like the one I'll describe should be scaled across the state and should be funded by the state. And really investing in Black communities and other working class communities that have been historically disinvested in and have been locked out of capital markets is really important and an important part of the Wealth Accelerator's core mission. So our first pilot, which we're really excited about, is called the Cash Catalyst Program. And it's an accelerated baby bonds pilot that's designed to mirror Connecticut's baby bonds program. And because of the long runway of the baby bonds program in Connecticut, the Cash Catalyst Program is modeled to research and understand what baby bond investments would look like for people today. And we're starting with CONCAT graduates. The pilot will provide direct capital of $20,000 to 20 graduates who are in the age range that baby bonds would be distributed in Connecticut, so ages 18 to 30. Which they can use towards wealth building opportunities, including buying a home, starting a business, pursuing education or retirement savings. And really the goal of the pilot is to understand the supports that people need to convert capital into wealth and provide those insights to the Office of the Treasurer to inform the implementation of the baby bonds program at scale. And I think really the promise of the Cash Catalyst program is to build lasting financial health for working class New Haven families. And we really see this as more than a pilot. It's really that chance to demonstrate that investing in people's futures and giving them financial choice really should exist and should be scaled by the state.
Mm. As this initiative started to build into the reality of the finished report, what were some of the interesting things that struck you, particularly in relation to not only the demographic of folks that you hope to best serve, but differences in how you might apply something like the Cash Catalyst for somebody who's like maybe 18, 19 years old versus somebody who's pushing 30?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we are at the beginning of this. So we launched in June, the first solution for the cash will be distributed in early 2026.
Mm-hmm.
But we are anticipating that and what we've seen in research is that the age distribution, the 18 to 30 year olds are likely to invest in different wealth building, initiatives, and that they're likely to need different types of supports. And so we have a range of supports that we're offering the participants who are going to be a part of the program. So they'll all receive financial education, and an option to meet with a financial advisor, but the wraparound supports are really depending on their needs. So if someone wants to buy their first home, for example, they'll receive first-time home buyer education, introduction to financial institutions, which they may not have access to, who can support with for example, first-time mortgage or stacking home buyer credits. And so we're really trying to tailor the program to understand what people need based on which wealth building intervention they choose and where they are in their lives. And as you can imagine, an 18-year-old might be in a very different place than a 30-year-old and may need very different supports. And so how can we make sure that folks have access to those supports and ultimately inform the Office of the Treasurer's program to make sure that people have those supports so that the baby bonds program in Connecticut, which is incredible, can live up to the promise that we all hope it has.
Very good. I understand there may have was a different initiative that also emerged from your work, the Savings GPS.
Yes. Yeah. That's also in early stages. Like Eric had mentioned, this was like a glimmer of an idea. And I think, Eric, it took us like a couple of years, right, to get some pilots going. And so, yes, the Savings GPS pilot, the idea behind that is that we are working with the Comptroller's Office, the Connecticut Comptroller's Office, who has started a program called MyCT Savings, which is an auto IRA retirement savings program. For low income, primarily for low income workers, although workers throughout the state who may not have access to traditional retirement savings vehicles. And the idea is that we would support increase in enrollment for retirement savings program. There's a pretty low enrollment rate right now, and then also support employers to take advantage of the program so that everyone can have access to retirement savings.
Excellent. Very good.
And that's still in early stages for us.
Well, then I am excited that this will be the first of probably a number of conversations I'll be having with you and other key folks who came in as players representing their various organizations in the scope of the project. And I imagine it is going to be successful because it sounds like you have a real powerhouse of organizations and funders, backers, and creative thinkers behind it. I'd like to just take the last couple minutes that we have for this morning's segment on this Wealth Accelerator to go back to you, Eric Clemens, from Concorp and Concat, and ask you to imagine, if you could, 5 years down the road, and based on what you've seen already and what you know and your input into this project, what would be the dream come true come 2030 when it comes to this Wealth Accelerator?
That's such a great question, because that's the way I think, John. I think 5 and 10 years down the road a lot. And my hope and what I can imagine is that this program scales and becomes a national program. And even more so, you know, Kate so eloquently talked about the technical aspects of this work. Mm. What's really important, and I know this to be true, is because I grew up very poor. What's really important is that people now know that other people care about them and their well-being, and not just their well-being, but those folks, those human beings who have yet to be born into their generations. And that, when you know people care about you, it gives you a deeper sense of hope. And when people start demonstrating that care through a Wealth Accelerator model or other endeavors, it actually helps the person who is giving help more than it helps the person who is receiving help. Mm. And so I think outside of the technical aspects of the model and its scaling and people now living a life of potential, my hope is that it will infect others in a way that they start caring about people who may not be as fortunate as they are. I've lived both lives. I've lived a life of poverty and now a life of relative privilege. I've lived in poverty longer than privilege. So I know both worlds. And I was always wondering who was going to come help me out of this condition that I find myself in. Mm. And so that to me is just scaling hope and scaling love and scaling care is just as important as scaling an economy.
Without the humanity, all the data and hard work and number crunching and pages of reports don't have the potency.
It doesn't. It only helps some.
Yep.
Our idea is to help all.
Very good. The Wealth Accelerator is committed to helping millions of underrepresented people right here in Greater New Haven and eventually across New England find clear and effective ways to build and keep their wealth. There's a website called WealthAcceleratorCT.org you can go to meet some of the other dedicated players in getting this effort off the ground. You can review their report, Accelerate Launching Community-Driven Wealth Building Solutions, and find out about activities and, most importantly, how to get involved. I want to thank our guests this morning, Eric Clemens, CEO of Concorp and Concat, and Kate Reeves with the Connecticut Project, the Director of Economic Well-Being. Guys, appreciate it, and I know we'll be talking again as this program begins to ramp up, and I'm excited for your future roles in it. Thank you so much for your time today. Well, over the years and years and years that I have had the pleasure of being acquainted with Kathy Marr and her great work and her team at the Barnum Museum, she's been a great and frequent resource to the award-winning For the People, and today is no different, whether we're joining her in the museum itself or by phone or at activities that the Barnum Museum puts on. We're always pleased to chat with her because she's so drilled in not only to her own work, but the way that the Barnum Museum plays a unique role in things like tourism and education and historic preservation in Greater Bridgeport. But all in all, as they say on their website, the Barnum Museum just essentially fulfills P.T. Barnum's own mission to inspire curiosity, creativity, and confidence through instructive entertainment. And we'll be talking a little bit about that, as well as a well-deserved Emmy Award that they were a part of just recently. But we want to get into all that after reminding you about our friends, the Backyard Beekeepers. Yes, the Backyard Beekeepers Association is presenting a special in-person speaker opportunity with Julia Mahood at 7:30 p.m. on July 22nd. Julia is currently the president of the Georgia Beekeepers Association, and she's a national authority on honeybee drones. Come join starters and experienced beekeepers at 7 p.m. on July 22nd to socialize and chat ahead of the speaker presentation. It's all free and happening at the Norfield Congregational Church in Weston. Even though the event is free, the group is requesting you register if planning to come out. So go to backyardbeekeepers.com and learn more and get involved. All right. Any beekeeping activities on the agenda there at the Barnum, Kathy?
I'm going to that program. The honeybee drones. Yeah, you had me at honeybee drones.
Okay, great.
That's fantastic. So that might be the activity.
Yeah, these guys haven't been
join me. I'll go.
Or maybe you can host them at the Barnum Museum. You know, it's
they're
always looking to spread their education and knowledge. So maybe this will be a match made in a hive at the Barnum Museum someday. So we'll see what happens. But we talked about and have been following the chronology of the disasters you have had to literally weather from the now famous tornado that's in the dim and distant past. More recently, the boiler explosion. And it sounds like maybe these downfalls have actually had a little bit of a silver lining in that they've given you a lot of education and a lot of experience in dealing with some of the other different types of challenges that, that you and the museum have been facing in recent years.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, it is interesting. Maybe it's the school of hard knocks, but lessons learned is priceless. And just recently, I spoke out at the National Conference of Museums in L.A. about lessons learned, about going through one after the next. And it's not anything that I ever expected would be on my resume or at this point my obituary. But being able to see the nuances in patterns and be able to forecast forward, you know, right now we're yet in another, you know, crisis, not just us, all nonprofit organizations across the country with the federal eliminations that we're all facing, you know, how do you navigate through this? And so that's really what we've been, you know, trying to keep momentum going while dialing back and ensuring that we'll make it through this next hump, you know, because, you know, about what we're going to talk today, we've lost key funding to keep many of our programs going, you know, like, you know, and that's what right now we're scrambling to, you know, replace money coming in. So, you know, and I'll say it for us, if anybody, you know, wants to support the museum or your own favorite charity, they need your help now. You know, so asking everybody to step up and ensure, you know, help us, that's fantastic, but help, you know, the causes in your neighborhood as well, because they need the help too.
And I guess in an ironic coincidence, when we look back at the life of P.T. Barnum, it was fraught with you know, financial emergencies and challenges. It was fraught with disasters like fires and mayhem. And yet he persevered because he had the inspiration in his heart. You know, not to put a finer point on it, but, you know, it sounds like what you and your team are facing there.
You're absolutely right. Barnum's life, well, his autobiography, he titled Struggles and Triumphs. So doesn't that sum it all up? But his perseverance was one of his, was part of his compass. You know, it was like he was a, you know, a true believer in provenance. You know, if I was faced with this challenge, it's to make me better. So find the path forward. And that's truly what we do. And maybe I just have a similar vein, you know, in my body, but I just, the Barnum Museum is way too important to the community. You know, the people of Bridgeport deserve their museum back. And that's what we've been fighting for. And it's got to be a museum for the people, as was Barnum's original intention. So, the exciting news is that we haven't gotten all the funding, but we've got half the funding to get the next phase of construction rolling. And our first meeting is next week. We're getting the band back together, the architects, the historic preservation experts, the structural engineers, mechanical. So the designers, we're all getting back together again to chart out the plan and get rolling.
And in the interim, one of the triumphs that you've been able to celebrate is an Emmy.
Shout out to a phenomenal team. We started the YouTube channel. Quick little bit of a backstory, because I recently reached out to David Fay, who's the director of the Bushnell Theater. Okay. So he and I were on the governor's transition committee when, you know, Lamont stepped in, and he and I got to be friendly. And he said to me, after one of the meetings, he said, you need a Barnum, you know, like TV channel. You need a Barnum channel. It's just too big a story. Wouldn't that be fantastic? And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And it stayed with me. So when COVID hit, it was like, oh, my God, now's the time for the channel. So we launched our YouTube channel as a COVID pivot. a programming COVID pivot and assembled a team. Rui Pinot and Will Saris are our production specialists. And then we've had a few content developers, Betsy Kellum, Golden, Darren, Raymond Locke, Adrian St. Pierre. God, they all have three names. And they have been exceptional. And we won an Emmy for our Showman Shorts a couple of years ago. And then just last month, we won a second Showman Shorts Emmy Award from the New England chapter. And in that time, we won four Telly Awards. So talk about a COVID success story.
Yeah, that's great.
To keep that going, and on behalf of the entire museum and the legacy of Barnum, my hat goes off to these people who have made, you know, it such a phenomenal success. So, yeah. So, we're struggling to get the funding to keep that educational programming going because we lost the funding through these cuts.
Sure.
But we don't want the momentum to die on it.
Yeah.
So it's been a real effort.
Yeah. And a couple of components of that education programming are targeting our younger creatives. I know as this interview between us plays on the 13th, yesterday you hosted a robot coders activity for kids in grades 4 through 8. But the good news is that summer will not end without another opportunity for young people to do cool stuff at the Barnum. Coming up on July 26th, you have a 3D design initiative coming in to
do
some training.
Through that program as well.
Yeah.
They're doing it as part of a series of programs. So they'll be doing that program as well. We've been really lucky. We also worked with the Lego Institute that do the programs with Bridgeport kids. So that is one thing that folks also don't know. In Barnum's history, he was an avid collector and brought to his American Museum automatons.
Mm-hmm.
We call them like animatronics today, like what Disney has.
Right.
So Mechanical Wonders and, you know, were a fascination of Barnum, and his museums always exhibited these extraordinary things. I've even spoken to the National Conference of Animatronic, you know, enthusiasts and collectors.
Yeah.
And And one of the biggest collectors, believe it or not, was Murtaugh Guinness, the Guinness family.
Yes.
I had the absolute pleasure of meeting Murtaugh Guinness in New York City before he passed away. And that entire collection of automata are at the Morris Museum in New Jersey. So you could even go see some of these from 17th and 18th century wonders. But yeah, having these programs at the museum is a joy to get, you know, all kids, kids of all, children of all ages, because adults have been interested in it.
Sure.
Of course.
Just like you did, just put a plug in for folks to go down to Jersey to see that museum, reeling it closer to home, you're partnering with the Mark Twain House and Museum in August for this Jumping Through Hoops. And Betsy Golden Kellum.
Jumping Through Hoops.
Yeah. What's that about? We've got about two minutes.
Betsy has been wonderful. She's been involved with the museum and is really a Barnum researcher, circus researcher. So she finished her book, Jumping Through Hoops. So we partner with the Mark Twain House a lot, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Jeff Nichols is back as their director, and Betsy and I will be going. So it's in Hartford on their site, and we'll be doing a book talk and conversation about women and genders in circuses and really tying it to the fascination of how women evolve as representatives in communities, showing up in jobs, what that looks like through the 19th century. And this really is a lens on women in performance. So it'll be a real treat to go see that. So that's up on our website, and we're sending the e-blasts out. So sign up for the Barnum Museum e-blasts.
Yes.
Go right to our website, barnum-museum.org. And you could see what's happening. And then come the fall, we're bringing back Michael Bawala and the downtown Bridgeport Wicked Walks for the season. So that's going to be coming up soon, too.
Very good. Lots of activities going on, continuous outreach. But as we stressed earlier on in the program, we'd love for you to get to the Barnum Museum's website and make a donation of $5 or $10, $500 to $10,000 would not be declined. And I'm sure they would put it to good work, as Kathy Marr, their director, always has. She and her team have weathered so many challenges, but continue to persevere, just like the namesake of where they operate, the Barnum Museum down there in Bridgeport. Again, their website is barnum-museum.org. We hope you'll go there to explore all the opportunities that the Barnum Museum can bring you. And Kathy, once again, we thank you for being part of the program, and we're going to make our next chat with you a visit down there. So I can't wait to see you again.
That's perfect. That is perfect. And make sure you look for our YouTube channel too, because you'll have over 280 programs to enjoy, so you can see what it's like,
including
and cheer on our successful team.
Yes, including not one but two Emmy award-winning segments. So we hope people will do that. Link to that through the website, or just go to YouTube and put in Barnum Museum. Thanks, Kathy. Take care.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a PSA for our program that's relevant to the audiences and communities we serve, you must make your request for consideration in writing via email to john.vocat@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program can be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station websites. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Vocat. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime. Just find it under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.